Hi, Steve.
Hello, how are you?
I'm good.
Think I'm gonna take out the listings.
What listings?
In the agenda, we got asked about that. Welcome, folks. Well, we have 11 people now, and I think we'll wait a little bit. I guess recording has started, but I can pause it if someone promises to remind me. Okay, so the agenda is part of the live notes, and the first part is to talk about personnel. So you should be aware that unlike Snowmass 2013, we keep getting a new chair of Snowmass itself. So Joel Butler is now the top level person in the executive committee for DPF. So he's in charge overall, replacing Tao Han. And you can find, there's a link here to the whole list of the new executive committee. So that's all changed. And then in CompF2, Kevin Pedro from Fermilab is now a convener. And in CompF7, we have Steve Bailey, who has joined us recently. He's from LBL. So welcome to them. And if Kevin or Steven would like to say something, now would be a good time to introduce yourself.
Hi, I'm Stephen Bailey from LBL. I lead the data management team for DESI, so I'm coming from the cosmology side of things, though in a former life as a grad student, I was in particle physics on CDF and Babar as a postdoc, so I've sort of spanned the gamut.
Excellent. Thank you. Is Kevin on?
Yeah, I'm here.
Yeah. Do you want to say something?
Sure. So I'm currently an associate scientist at Fermilab. Previously, I was a postdoc at Fermilab. I got my PhD at University of Maryland, mostly on CMS, but have variously worked on Diabay, Atlas, Click, Dune, et cetera. So I also have spanned quite a few projects. I'm mainly focusing on the detector simulation and generator aspects in the computational frontier in this convenership. So looking forward to getting out a bunch of nice white papers.
Thank you. And the next agenda item involves the meeting that we had with the neutrino frontier last time. And Alex Himmel organized most of that. So we're hoping he'll give us a little report.
Sure, I could do that. The I'll warn you that this is based on my memory of the meetings. I was running the meeting, didn't take fantastic notes, so it's been a little bit hazed over by a few weeks break. But hopefully that's synthesized the running themes of that meeting. So the presentation of that meeting largely came from that, and actually our previous meeting at the Snowmass restart day largely came from the Dune experiments. I think they had they're the largest user of computing in neutrinos in sort of the Snowmass timescale. And for that reason, they've also thought more carefully about these issues. But many of the issues that affect Dune affect the nearer term, liquid argon SBN program as well, right? It uses a lot of the same software, has a lot of the same problems. The scale isn't quite as big. When you're trying to get an impression of Dune computing, it is large, but it's not quite, LHC exascale large. The estimate is sort of about a tenth the scale of LHC computing. So it is not, it's not setting the scale, so to speak, but it's still pretty big. It's big enough that we need to think carefully about how to do it, especially because many of Dune's computing challenges have a different character than the LHC's computing challenges, right? The very short summary of that idea, right, is that Dune has a small number of events, each of which is individually very large, whereas colliders tend to deal with a very large number of very small events, right? So that creates some different challenges, both in low-level computing and in sort of higher-level computing down the line. So given that, the biggest worry coming from Dune and from neutrino folks generally is not so much about the literal availability of computing resources, but about the availability of, essentially professional expertise to put the infrastructure in place for us to make effective use of those computing resources, right? That, you need, there's a lot of sort of professional development that has happened for the LHC that has really not happened for neutrino experiments. And so looking at sort of the future of what Dune's going to need, it's going to need a substantial increase in the number of sort of human hours dedicated to these sort of computing problems. That worry is exacerbated by the move from more traditional grid computing towards HPCs in the US, right? Those, the amount of resources is large and you can do interesting things there, but they require even more of this sort of specialized expertise that most physicists don't necessarily have, right? And so, you need professionals to put the infrastructure in place and to provide training and guidance so that, you know, students know how, you know, can and learn how to use those machines well. There's also a worry that maybe this is my worry more than this is an impression of the community as a whole, but I think I'm not the only one who shares it, right? That the HPC trust and access model is not super consistent with how collaborations deal with membership, right? You know, just becoming a member of Dune doesn't get you access to NERSC, right, in the way it does to the OSG. And so there's some work that has to happen, some things that has to happen there that's more of a policy issue than a technical one, but I think it's also important to trying to make this all a success. So those were my impressions. I'll pause, and if other folks have things that we discussed that I missed, please feel free to pipe up with them.
So Alex, regarding this joining issue, isn't NERSC now going to a situation where they'll have recognized institutions whose credentials they'll accept?
Possible. I don't know. Maybe I'm not up on the news.
Yeah, we will, but you still have to be a NERSC. You still have to have a NERSC account. It just means you can use your credential from somewhere else, but you still have to have a NERSC account. But on the other hand, if the HEP program office gives Dune an allocation at NERSC, then any member of Dune could be a NERSC user if they don't come from a T4 country. But
mm-hmm.
So,
yeah,
I mean, it should be semi-automatic as long as the HEP office give an allocation to Dune, which is not a NERSC issue. It's
right.
So anyway.
Kevin has his hand up.
Yeah,
I also had a question on this topic since we're discussing it. And you mentioned OSG, and in fact, the paradigm that we've used throughout HEP with OSG and the grid is that, you know, credentials can sort of be forwarded without an account being present. Is there any chance that NERSC allows this, you know, even if it's specifically for example, a Dune allocation, that they would let that allocation be accessed in a grid fashion, or is that just not on the table?
Yeah, so, I mean, there's people who use, I mean, obviously, like the LHC experiments run stuff at NERSC.
Right.
Using grid credentials. So there's a couple of things there. I mean, if experiment runs something within their account and takes responsibility for it and then allows some other people, you know, we could, I guess, you know, that's not us doing something. I'm aware this is being recorded and everything, so I'm just careful what I say, but, you know, people can do that at the moment, if you like.
Wait, no, I guess I don't understand how the credentials work for those workflows, but.
Okay, I suggest we don't get into the details of this here.
Mm-hmm.
I did not want to imply that this was a enormous unsolvable problem. It's just to say that it's going to require some negotiation and thinking to pull all the pieces together and make it all work. And then it's not clear to me quite yet what the shape of that is going to be.
Yeah. So, I mean, practically, you know, from a technology point of view, there are some mechanisms at the moment, and there's also directions in terms of more federated ID access where, you know, there's going to be like a better kind of use of other people's credentials. And I think what HEP, the direction that HEP is moving in with co-manage and so forth is similar to how NERSC and OSCAR is moving. So that, I think, is well aligned in terms of those technical aspects. But then I think you're right, there is a policy aspect in terms of like, and I think this has been going on since I've been here, in terms of like long-term allocations and being able to commit, you know, resources. And in some senses, this is up to the HEP allocations managers. But there's also technology aspects of that as well, because I guess you don't know what necessarily the NERSC next machine is going to be like, and whether you actually can commit computing or will be able to use whatever accelerators are on it, for example. So there's quite a few kind of issues there.
Danielle, you have your hand up.
Yeah, I wanted to ask Alex if he could say a few words about the path on how to move forward with future communication between the neutrino frontier and our computing frontier.
That's a great question. So certainly I come to both meetings and try and make sure information moves back and forth. My impression, right, is that both groups are moving into the report writing phase, right? And so I suspect that the next moves here, right, we've sort of done the first round of information sharing. I'm gonna try and, as I said, I didn't get together to get the recordings of that meeting before this. I'm gonna try and get a hold of those recordings and then put a few notes down on paper, so to speak, that we can have on hand to inform report writing from the computing side. And then I suspect it's just a question of, my impression is cross-read relevant sections of each other's reports and try and make sure that the information was consistent and that the things that needed to be there were there. I can try and coordinate that by trying to find the right person to read the right section and those sorts of things. But that was sort of what I had in mind. Do other folks here think that there's additional sort of information sharing we need to do prior to the report writing?
Are you asking the group in general, or are you asking
us? You are, I mean, you know, I should say is that was my impression of where we were in the process. If folks think that there's other, input that they need, we can try and coordinate that too.
I mean, what are your white paper plans?
There are a variety of white papers on the neutrino side. I suspect most of them are not specifically focused on computing. There may be sections of it that have references to computing, which is the thing I'm going to try and keep an eye out for. I suspect a larger fraction of this is going to be CompF. I'm not that worried about the white papers. I'm more worried about the frontier reports and making sure that the neutrino relevant sections of the computing frontier report reflect the things that we discussed here. And I'll run them by folks on the neutrino front once there's something concrete written, which often has a way of bringing out more information than sort of, the upfront discussions that are more vague.
I think it's very key to make sure that these sections are drawn to the attention of the report writers, right?
Yeah. Yeah, absolutely, right? I mean, so my sense is that there's not a, certainly on the neutrino side, I don't think there is a computing white paper that's being written, right? I suspect there are white papers that touch on computing ideas throughout. Like I said, trying to do it at the white paper level, I think might be very challenging, right? My priority was going to be to make sure that the frontier reports had the information they needed and that we cross-checked at that level rather than at the white paper level.
Well, in order that it make it into the frontier report, if you were to, for example, write an executive summary that went into, I'm imagining CompF 2, but I'm not sure who you're at, maybe you're thinking of CompF 1, but if you were to summarize and refer to, write something that summarizes and refers to the various white papers which have computation-related material in subsections, you could send in a kind of executive summary or overview of this that at least draws to the frontier report writers or the subtopical report writers that this material exists, so that it's not, so that it's very clearly drawn to our attention, would be my reaction.
Let me say, I'll see what I can do.
So we have similar within Lattice QCD, for example. There are lots of physics topics that might have some relevant subsections, and people are thinking of writing an executive summary or essentially a cover letter to come to us to say, by the way, this exists.
Yeah, so the structure on the neutrino side is that the a lot of the white papers are actually getting written effectively in parallel with the frontier reports. And so the thing that we may have that we'll have handy I will do the best I can on the sort of white paper by white paper level. Like I said, my focus, I think it's going to be easier to try and handle on the frontier report level and write and try and maybe feed down to white papers as it makes sense.
I think that what I would suggest is along the lines of what I contributed to the common session during the last Energy Frontier workshop. We had a common session, where we discuss computing issues in the context of Energy Frontier. And what I suggested was that people established a small team of people that could actually translate the content of the white papers into some concrete concepts and numbers that could be made powerful statements in the reports. It's typically very easy for people to write a few ideas in abstract terms, but I think it would be important that in a concrete way, people say what kind of tools, in this case, software or computing tools, would be needed by a particular frontier that need to be supported in the form of person power and funding, and also what kind of R&D would be necessary in order to match the requirements of the future experiments, and to do that as much as possible in numbers, in concrete, you know, numbers of amount of computing needed, or, you know, backed up by, you know, the large data that would be taken, et cetera, et cetera. So in other words, I mean, establishing a small team of people could be, you know, two or three people or five, I don't know, who could really abstract the main ideas in concrete proposals and numbers from the white papers, and that we put that in very clearly and prominently in the reports, what would be useful.
Thank you, Daniel. I think this is an interesting discussion, but it was only supposed to last about 5 minutes, or the report was. So probably a good idea to move on to the community summer study report from Ben, because we have to have a discussion that will result in Ben reserving rooms. Ben, would you like to take it away?
Great, yeah. Thanks, Alex, for the report. Right, so the summer study will be the culmination of the Snowmass process, where we will meet in real time across Snowmass to discuss basically the conclusions. So the summer study is planned to be in person, or at least we'll have a significant in-person component. It's going to be in Seattle during the summer. And at the moment, the committee, there's like a organizing committee that's trying to put together, think about room allocations and such. And so we were asked to identify what our, you know, requests would be. And I looked back at what the what was used in the last Snowmass in 2013. So that kind of forms the basis for the baseline proposal. So it seems like a lot of people had sort of one plenary at the beginning and one plenary at the end. By many people, I mean the frontiers. And so that seems natural, I guess, for us to do as well. And then it seems like most frontiers have one or fewer parallels per topical group. When I say fewer, I mean like, you know, topical groups were kind of joined together. So it seems like a sort of natural thing to do to have one parallel session per topical group. For us, that would be 7. We could also imagine having some of them be together, but that seems like a natural time to interact with the community to kind of go over the report itself, which should have some, you know, its preliminary version ready at the time. And then there could also be scope for joint parallel. So I know, for instance, that the theory group is already interested in having a joint parallel to have a panel discussion on QIS. So that would be a natural joint endeavor, but there may be other relevant ones as well. So I lay that proposal out, and I'm happy to hear what everyone thinks about what would be useful, or if we need something more or something less. I see Kevin. Yeah, go ahead.
Yeah, I have a really minor question. You said the summer, depending on who you ask, the summer could be, you know, May through September. Is there a more precise date targeted for this yet?
Yeah, yes. The dates are set, of course. I don't remember the top of my head. I'm looking it up just now. Maybe someone knows off the top of their head already. July 17 and 27. Yeah.
Okay. Okay, good. Thanks.
I will even put that in here. So.
Talking about this summer meeting, I have a question. Given this pandemic, since is there any like a plan B, or it's going to be still going to be in person? Or?
Yeah, that's a great question, and I would have liked to have a better answer for you. But just before the holidays, things are looking, I guess, a bit better. There was definitely going to be a virtual component of the CSS. I mean, that's has been cleared from the start, given the pandemic situation, but they were hopeful that a significant portion of people would be in person. And in large part, that was because, you know, there had to be a plan B, and at some point there had to be something triggered, whether we needed to reserve, you know, all the rooms at the University of Washington. And I think Omicron has just totally thrown that plan out the door. So I don't know now. We're supposed to have another committee meeting. So all the frontiers have one representative on this committee, and so I'm representing our frontier, and the committee meeting is next Wednesday. And so I will have more information to share with all of you after that time, at that point. But at the moment, I have no new information about what the plan B is. But clearly, this is something on the minds of the committee and the organizers.
Thank you.
Yeah, in part because there's money on the table, right? Because yes. You need to reserve. Yeah, it's non-negligible amount of money. Yeah.
I have a quick question. I forgot if that's something that's Jean-Louis, by the way, the liaison with the accelerator. Forgot if that's a question I asked already at the previous meeting or not. Sorry, I'm becoming not that young anymore. But anyway, how essential it is, especially for the liaison, to be there for the entire meeting in the summer? Because just very practical detail on my side, I'm flying back from France on the 18th. So basically, I won't be able to be there before the 19th. Can someone comment on this and whether that's a big issue or not?
Well, we can't ensure that everyone will be there for the whole meeting. And, you know, you just do what you're the best you can and try and fit what you can into your schedule. Mm-hmm. And we'll do our best and try and talk to accelerator physicists ourselves if you can't be there.
Okay, sounds good. I mean, I should be there again starting on the 19th, but okay, thanks.
You know,
great. Yeah, and I don't know. Clearly, ideally, the first plenary would be somewhere near the beginning of the workshop and then the first day or two. But the other parallels, I don't know when they'll happen. I guess we haven't gotten to that level of granularity yet.
Well, yeah, that's a good point. So if we know you're not there, we can try and schedule things that you're interested in a little later when you can be there.
That would be awesome.
Yeah, so if other people have constraints that they know about now, let us know. And Jean-Luc, would you like to have a joint session with the accelerator frontier? Have you discussed that with them at all?
We have not discussed that, but I'm happy to check with them. Is that something that you are aware of on your side? Or?
No, I'm not aware about that. Yeah, I agree. I think we probably should discuss with them.
Yeah, so this would be a good opportunity for all the liaisons to reach out to the frontier conveners of the frontier they liaise with and ask if they want a joint parallel session.
I agree. I would note that I suspect we are not going to be able to have a joint session with every frontier, probably. So we should have the session if it's useful. But I think just assuming that every frontier will have one, I think it's probably not going to happen.
Well, I agree with you, Ben. But I think we should reach out and ask if they want it and what they want to discuss.
I totally agree. I made a note of that on the notes. And, okay, I don't see any other questions. I mean, I think the proposal is not too controversial. So if there's nothing else, I'm happy to hand it back to you, Steve.
Thank you. Okay, well, the next item I think is pretty simple. Ben, Danielle, and I would like to try to have these what we call 3-on-3 meetings, where we meet with the three topical group conveners, just the six of us. And there's a doodle poll. The link is here in the live notes. And the way it works is the three topical group conveners should agree on a time when they can all make it and pick one time. The doodle poll is set up so that once one group picks that time, another group can't. And they're half an hour meetings spread out over next week and the following week. So please start to fill that in. And we'll have those meetings. And now, with half an hour left, we're to the what we thought might be the major section of this, which is we've asked you all to start listing white papers that you're expecting in the live notes. And it looks like that's been done very nicely. So perhaps we'll give each group a few moments to comment on anything they want to say about the white papers they're expecting. So we can start with, might as well just go in order, COMP F1, experimental algorithms.
Yes, so we have one confirmed white paper effort on the live notes. We contacted all of the letters of interest contact people that had COMP F1 as their primary group. We only heard back from one, and we plan to reach out to the other LOI authors again sometime within the month.
Thank you. COMP F2 has a nice long list.
Do you want me to speak, or
whoever of you wants to, if you want to?
We put this together jointly. So Accelerators has a single white paper that's a very well-organized community. I mean, they have this looking regular meetings and so on that are quite incredible. On the theory side, there's both a precision physics computational needs white paper being worked on by Tobias Neumann, Andreas van Manteuffel, and Fernando Cordero. On the lattice side, Andreas Kronfeld, who was until recently the chair of USQCD, is writing. There were a bunch of white papers in 2019, sorry, not 2018, that USQCD wrote on various topics, including one on computing. Andreas is summarizing these white papers for the community. And there's some discussion as to whether it's going to be a wide community signed document or simply the direct authors of those seven or eight white papers that he's summarizing are going to submit them. But that's going to come in as a kind of statement for the community. In addition to that, myself and Trilwood Jung, and I spoke to Andreas about this yesterday, are going to write a kind of theory, more long-term computational paper, partly with the authors of the USQCD white paper, with the idea that we're going to look at technology directions on a longer horizon than that prior white paper. We're not sure about whether we're getting something from the conformal bootstrap people. I have a holding email from them saying, yeah, they'll get back to me with what their plans are from a month ago or so. But it's not a particularly large area, so I'm not absolutely sure. Then, of course, there's a lot, and similar to the neutrinos, there's a lot going to be, I think, a lot of, you know, we had something like 118 white papers submitted to COMP F2, many of them not really as computational white papers, but as science topical papers that had computing as part of their process. So I'm expecting a large number of cover letter based white papers where people are going to write a dedicated cover letter saying there's a little bit of computing somewhere in this white paper to us, essentially, certainly on the theory side. GE has been in touch with Salman Habib, who is, as far as we know, organizing a white paper for the cosmology community and has said he will do that. Then there are vision white papers coming for detector simulation, for generators. I'm treading on Kevin's toes here, so if Kevin wants to jump in, that's fine with me. And neutrino generators, and of course, there are also some pre-existing white papers because HEP experiment is a very large international community with a lot of computing and care and attention to it. So certainly there's something from HSF, of which Daniel knows more. Daniel and Kevin know more about this than I do, but there are pre-existing material as well, similar to, I would say, the USQCD pre-existing material, which are going to be drawn to our attention.
Yeah, I can just chime in briefly on the specifically the simulation side, I think. So I actually met with Christoph today, or not today, a couple days ago, about this detector simulation paper. And he had sent me an early draft. We discussed some of the content. I'll probably contribute at least a little bit to that one. I need to loop back to the generator's contacts and get a sense of what their status is and who's working on what. But I'll aim to do that, you know, next week probably.
And HSF is HEP Software Foundation?
Yeah.
Yeah, so I suppose I shouldn't assume everyone knows that.
We tend to have a lot of acronyms that are not defined very often. But
I'm actually also the HSF simulation convener along with Christoph, so.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Good. Okay, so for machine learning, I guess we have another Google Doc. So would someone like to address the list, which I'm bringing up in another tab?
Sure. I think, yeah, okay. Yeah, I can. So should I share screen or should I give you the link to the Google Doc?
The link is in the live notes, either way.
Ah, wonderful. Yeah. If you don't mind, I guess I will just share the screen.
Fine.
Thank you very much. So the reason why is because, so the Google Doc is the master document and that actually has all the details, this list of people. Here, I just decided to, for this meeting purpose, condense that into list of white papers, because I think that's the focus here, right? Mm-hmm. And so as we presented before, we have organized originally six subtopics within the CompF3. And actually, so far in the last few months, we have organized this whole list of white papers and also leads in each white paper with a group of people contributing to it. And we ended up so far having white paper on four out of original six topics. And also, as you can see, it's not quite balanced. There are lots of emphasis on the physics-specific machine learning. But yeah, this is the list. And so we can, as you can see here, four categories: interpretability and validation. There's a UQ answers and quantification methods. Large number of people interested in this one, and also recently some new white papers. This actually doesn't have even LOI, but people who are interested in working on this coming together to write together, adapting data versus simulation domain shift for the machine learning models, and for the physics specific machine learning methods. There are symmetry group, equivalent architectures, machine learning applications, the lattice field theories. These are, I would say, like very similar-minded people, but the second is very specific to the application, and the first one is more generic. It can be used for different kinds of applications, obviously outside lattice field theories. and also the reconstruction-related topic using graph methods. And then model independent searches for new physics, real-time machine learning. This one is with Instrument Frontier, the combined effort. Self-driving systems for physics, the data filtering, acquisition, and instrument calibration. Automated experimental design execution, graph geometries and graph neural networks for detector physics. As you can see, it's more coming toward the DAQ data taking and detector design towards the end, starting from more, more pure machine learning, algorithmic related topics. But all of these are under the physics specific machine learning. And there's one a group that's organizing kind of catch all simulation related methods for detector simulation. And there is a few groups under the education and engagement. However, with this one, I think it's coming together, I think. However, I'm not sure if they have enough human power to write a white paper. But so I didn't list a list of topics here, but there are three right now underneath. We'll see some of the leads in these white papers are also leading other white papers. So I just didn't want to list it here and put some pressures. But we might expect one or few papers coming from education and engagement, as this is definitely one thing that it has been emphasized within our group. I just don't want to promise something here, so I just put it here. One or two papers might come out. So that's the status for all of these white papers. I think in general, for all white papers, leads are frantically working to put something together. I would say they are in the rush to put the text together right now. And so some of them might drop, but I think for a good fraction of these, there are a group working on it. So I think we expect to have some white paper coming out.
Sounds like you'll have a lot to work with. Very nice.
Thanks to them.
Thank you. So CompF4, storage and processing resources, has a short sentence in here. I don't know if you want to expand it all orally.
So we don't have something so nice to work with yet, but we do. We've just formed a kind of this group of our leads in our different areas within subtopics. And so we've asked these experts to help us solicit white papers. So we do have a list, but it's not populated yet. So we'll get back to you on that, I guess.
Okay. Well, the live notes will be there for adding. Thank you. And CompF5 and user analysis seems to have half a dozen papers expected. Any comments?
I don't know which of us could say something, but this is more or less the list we had last time we had a plenary meeting.
Peter, you're really quiet. I don't know if others can hear you, and it's me.
No, it's probably me. The Zoom.
Now you think you're far away. Zoom hates like if you were far away.
Yeah. Zoom hates me. I say, I don't know, Amy, you want to do it?
Yeah, sure. Okay, so what are the question is just, do we have any comments on the white papers?
Basically, yeah, you have a list. It looks like a nice list.
Yeah, So Peter, go ahead and ping me in the chat if there's additional stuff that you'd like me to add to this. But I mean, right now, really, the focus is on finding people and recruiting people to write those papers.
Okay.
Can you hear me now?
Yeah, we can hear you.
Okay. I mean, I guess the only other thing I would say is also just making sure that we've got good section outlines mapped to the LOIs, because that's I think I've complained about this before, but our LOIs tended to be very tightly focused kinds of things where we're trying to encourage people to take a broader outlook than just, how we do it in Bell or whatever.
I'm so sorry, Peter. I apologize.
It's fine.
Maybe type it in the chat.
Yeah, it sounded important. I could hear mentioned it before about the templates.
LOIs.
Well, I heard Peter say that you're encouraging people to have a broader outlook, since a lot of the LOIs were quite specific, which I think is a very good strategy. So why don't we move on to CompF6? and see what they want to say. And if we need to come back to Comp F5, we'll be happy to do so.
So hi, everybody. Martin, I'm going to discuss Comp F6. So the list of white papers you see in the document here, there's input from experts in QAS and HEP. There may be some, there's certainly some dual purpose activities, in particular overlap with the theory frontier. So for instance, in the area of the black holes in computing, there may be just one report with a dual purpose executive summary that will be used on in the comp report. And the analogous statement applies for the quantum simulation, as the writers were also contributing on the theory side on classical simulation. So we haven't yet checked in with anybody or had a meeting ourselves in 2022, but we're just sorting out to do that in the next week or so. So I think there's no flags at the moment that we can see, but we haven't done a check-in to see exactly where things are yet.
Thank you, Martin. Last group, Comp F7. On reinterpretation and long-term preservation.
Yeah, I don't know if, well, so Steve and I have chatted a little bit. We're still kind of catching up a little bit in terms of, you know, where we were, but the we do have, there's one particular white paper that's in collaboration with the Collider Phenomenology Group around sort of data preservation, recasting, and reinterpretation, but in the kind of Collider Phenomenology context. And then we've had various kind of discussions that need to move forward about the connections with like the analysis facilities and the end user analysis side, so that they're, you know, so we need to like, whatever, you know, shape that up. I sent some emails just a little bit. There's also a, one of the white papers that was mentioned earlier by Kazu with the sort of automating experimental design. We've seen places where the infrastructure for, you know, powering that kind of thing overlaps a lot with the infrastructure you need for reinterpretation. There's a meeting of that group later today, which I will attend to try to see if it makes sense to, you know, partner or somehow recognize that overlap. And then Stephen, I think, has a pretty good handle on one of the LOIs that were one of the LOIs that he was involved with and that overlaps with some of the other LOIs that are more on the cosmology side. So that's kind of where we sit currently.
Sounds good. Sounds like you're making good progress. Is there anything that we need to discuss again about Comp F5 now, Amy?
No, your summary of Peter's point was excellent.
Okay, thank you. So under any other business, I can think of one thing, and then of course other people should chime in. But yesterday, I believe it was, Peter Boyle sent a message about a meeting that was took place at Brookhaven, and he sent it to, I think, six of us. Peter, do you want to mention this again?
So there's a statement on the Computation Frontier top level page saying that we want to see abstracts by the end of January. Or at least be told about white papers. And the Brookhaven leadership, so the associate lab director and deputy associate lab director, pointed out really quite powerfully that their view was that the March 15th deadline is the March 15th deadline with no negotiation, and that asking for early information, it could come across as being not within the spirit of SNOMAS, that, you know, anything submitted before, if somebody submits something before the March 15th deadline, it has to be considered on an equal and equitable basis and so on. And they took the impression that this asking to be given forewarning of things that are coming was not the top level SNOMAS rule set and that we should change this.
Well, my feeling is we did this for the sanity of our topical group conveners who are going to have a lot to read through and summarize. Yeah. And, you know, my feeling is they're welcome to their opinion, but we made this decision. We announced it months in advance. People ought to be able to come up with a paragraph. But that's
I'm relaying the message. You know, this came from Deputy LD specifically.
I believe that, you know, I actually, after you sent the message, Peter, I reread our statement. And I think that it may be that our statement, the part of the statement that says that we need to have those abstracts by the end of January in order for the papers to be given full consideration, maybe a little bit strong and may have raised, you know, the red alert in some people. I'm thinking that maybe if we modify slightly that statement to say that we strongly encourage or we really be thankful to everybody if they could send us the abstract by the end of January. And of course, we would need to see how we phrase this. But, you know, I also agree with Steve that the argument is for the sanity of the, you know, of the topical group conveners so that we know what is coming and we can organize ourselves and we can make best use of our time. I sympathize, of course, 100% with what Steve had just said, that we also have to think about actually producing something good, and for that we have to have enough time, and for that it would be useful to have the abstracts. But I agree that although of course I subscribe to the statements that we wrote in the wiki page, I agree that that part of the statement where we say that that we imply that we wouldn't give full consideration to the papers if people don't send the abstract by the end of January is a little bit too strong and unnecessarily, put some people in alert.
I mean, then, I certainly agree. I think it's not too much to ask somebody who's intending to write a whole white paper to manage a whole paragraph by the end of January, right? You know, given the disparity in the amount of work required. But I can see the DLD's point of view that this isn't within the rules of SNOMAS as a whole. It's something that's been made up locally. So I think that Daniel's right. If we temporize it to saying we would greatly appreciate it, will make the quality of the report writing better if we're able to plan or something like that. That's not the same as saying we won't give consideration. It's simply saying it will make our jobs easier if you do, so please do it.
You know, people should recognize this is a big filtering process. We're going to have hundreds of pages to read, which each topical group is going to condense into something like 15 to 20 pages. And then we're going to have a frontier report, which is going to be a further filter by about a factor of 7. So people can get really worked up about this in a way in which it's not maybe going to have a big impact, because the biggest questions are going to be, are we going to build a new accelerator in the future? It's not necessarily going to be, what are the computing projects? And I think we'll have to focus on a few important recommendations that we might actually hope to affect some funding on. For instance, we were just talking about long-term preservation, and maybe we need a national long-term storage facility. I keep having to move my archives of configurations from one center to another. And I'm not sure what the long-term prospects are for lattice gauge theory, much less other communities who may have similar needs. Anyhow, other people are welcome to chime in about whether they think we should change our wording or whatever.
We have Ben and Amy who have raised their hands.
Yeah, I'm looking at the live doc, so thanks for pointing that out. Please speak. Ben, your hand is up first in my display.
Yes, I just wanted to add a little bit. So I think it might be nice to modify the statement slightly. However, I would also point out that the reason that we're asking people to give us the titles before the end of January is not necessarily, I mean, of course, it makes it, you know, the job, quote unquote, easier for the topic group committers, but also makes it possible. I mean, in particular, if there's a topic that shows up, we want to make sure that all the topics are covered, basically, right? And so I think that's essential for knowing what the topics are going to be. I really think that's point number one. And point number two is that we are not saying that someone who writes a white paper or, you know, who doesn't tell us by the time can't have the white paper included in Snowmass. On the contrary, anyone who writes a white paper by March 15th will be included in Snowmass, but it would be difficult for that to be included in one of the CompF reports, which is a different statement, right? But nonetheless, I think that, you know, if the sentence that Daniel pointed out, I think in principle could be modified slightly, and I think would have no harm to us and would certainly, I think, be less scary sounding. So.
Thanks, Ben. Amy, you have your hand up.
Yeah, I just wanted to confirm that the enforcement of the January, end of January abstract was sort of group by group. Our group has less of a filtering issue and more of a recruitment issue. And that's why we're interested in sort of having a little bit more time. I think that we had already agreed that, but I just wanted to make sure I was understanding correctly.
Thank you.
And maybe just to say that I think you're understanding correctly, Amy. I totally agree. I mean, that's why we chose the word to say, I don't remember exactly what it says, but it doesn't say you won't be considered. It just says you may not be. I think we can certainly modify it to just sound less scary overall.
Awesome. Thank you.
Maybe we can explain how important it is for the quality of the reports, you know, to have these abstracts by January. As you said, Ben, in order to make sure that the report is complete, we explain and we remove that part of the statement that seems to imply that if you don't send your abstract by the end of January, then you're screwed, right? And I know that this is not what we are saying, but you know, perception is more important than reality.
G, you have your hand up, and then Obenna.
Yes. Yeah, I have a question. I about this abstract. My basic question is that this abstract is not, say, once they submit, they cannot change it, right? So I think, is that still, say, I mean, people can still revise, or when they submit the white paper,
It's just a heads up for us, so that we have an idea of what's coming if it's not ready by then. Okay, we ask for an abstract or a title. So, you know, you would hope that by the end of January, people who are planning on writing a report, a white paper, would at least have one of those two. And then we'll know there's something to be studied and to be looked for later. And it'll give you an opportunity to prioritize, because I guarantee if you read all the stuff that comes in, you're going to be busy. And then you have to write a report.
Right. Thanks. I think that's answers my question.
I mean, if someone comes in late with an idea you decide is great, and really important, I'm sure you'll deal with it, but you'll be probably be much happier if you have time to plan, more time to plan what you want to study and what you want to maybe find out more about on your own. Any other comments? We're getting close to the top of the hour. I see there's something in chat from Ben. Ah, okay. Ben reminds people to fill out the doodle poll for the 3-on-3 meetings. Any other closing comments, anyone? If not, I thank you all for your participation. And I think we had a productive meeting. So thanks a lot.
Thanks, everyone. Take care.
Thanks.